This is DW News live from Berlin. Russia rolls out its Sputnik vaccine against COVID-19 with a mass campaign in Moscow. 2 million doses are available for high-risk groups, but amid concerns about how fast the vaccine was approved, will Moscovites be lining up to get the injection? Also coming up. After 6 years and 6 billion kilometers, a Japanese space mission is set to deliver samples from a distant asteroid. They could provide clues to the origin of the solar system and life on our planet. I'm Michael Oku. Welcome. Moscow has launched a large-scale vaccination campaign with the Russian-made Sputnik vaccine against COVID-19. The country says it's produced around 2 million doses to date and will distribute the vaccine free of charge. Doctors, teachers, and social workers are among those first in line to receive the jab. The rollout is going ahead even though clinical trials have not yet been completed.
Sergei Satanovsky took the leap after seeing friends fall ill with COVID-19. The journalist at DW's Russian service says he did a lot of research into the vaccine before signing up for trials. I decided for myself that at the very least the vaccine is safe, and in the best case it will be effective, if they give me the vaccine rather than the placebo. Before they vaccinated me, they told me it was safe, but they gave me a life insurance policy anyway. In case of death, my relatives will receive the equivalent of around 22,000 euros in compensation. In case I become disabled, they'll get up to 17,000 euros, but I doubt that will happen. Around 40,000 people have already taken part in trials for Sputnik V, one of the two Russian vaccines. Trials for both are ongoing, but the vaccines are already registered and being rolled out across Russia. Doctors and teachers are first in line to receive the jab, which authorities have emphasized will be free and voluntary. But there have already been media reports of people being put under pressure by their employers to sign up. The Union of Medical Workers is being put under pressure to agree to getting vaccinations. But we have also seen mass refusals and even resignations. Of course, that isn't improving our healthcare system. Not all teachers say they are on board with a vaccination scheme either. We are supposed to sign saying we will carry the risk. So if I got vaccinated, I would be risking my health without any guarantees that the vaccine won't have a negative effect on my body. That's why I would like to have the choice whether I want to get vaccinated or not. And Russia isn't just rolling out Sputnik V to its own population. It has already delivered samples of the vaccine to Serbia, Hungary, and Venezuela. And it also has production deals with several countries, including India and China. Experts say the goal is to show that Russia is a scientific superpower. The vaccination can be compared with a space race. The main thing is to stake a claim on being first, the first country who produced a vaccine and the first to start vaccinating people. We won't find out what effect the vaccine had until a year or two from now, or which one was the most successful, this one, the British one, or the American one. But Sergei Satanovsky is hoping for more than politics. After getting the first of two jabs, he had a fever but quickly felt fine. Now he's hoping the Russian vaccine will keep him safe from the coronavirus, along with thousands of others getting the jab across the country.
I'm now joined by Mohamed Mounir, who's a viral infection and vaccine expert at Lancaster University in the UK. Dr. Mounir, welcome to DW. It might appear that Russia, the UK, and the US are in a race to develop a successful vaccine. What are potential pitfalls of this kind of competition?
Well, thank you very much, Michael, for having me on the show. I think we are in a pandemic and an unprecedented situation. Therefore, there is certainly a pressure onto having a vaccine, because a good vaccine, effective, safe vaccine, is probably the ultimate way out of this pandemic. So this has put a lot of pressure on to different governments and pharmaceutical. But one thing I would like to highlight here is that this is the first time when we have seen an extensive collaboration between the government and the private sector to really bring forward for a vaccine that is safe and effective and could be deployed to really curtail this pandemic. And I think the only problem that I can see with rushing this one is to have an enhanced number of vaccine hesitancy, because anytime we will come up with any data that isn't really satisfactory or the one that is convincing the public, that's going to do more harm than good. So certainly our fight would be against the virus, not against each other.
Mm. Can you explain to a regular non-medical person, of course, how this Russian vaccine works?
Sputnik V is based on an adenovirus vaccine vector. This is based on their previous technology, which they have used for Ebola virus as well. And so it's a two-dose-based regime. First dose is given 20 days after. The second dose is given by two different vaccine vectors. So altogether, it would have almost the same side effect as does with AstraZeneca, Johnson & Johnson, and CanSino, the Chinese vaccine. All they use the same technology to deliver the antigen.
As you surely know, Doctor, the Sputnik vaccine is being rolled out in a mass vaccination drive today. Even though it's still in phase three clinical trials, is that unusual? And what results would you expect given those circumstances?
I think it's certainly very unusual. I know that there is an unprecedented need and everybody wants to have a vaccine, effective vaccine getting into the arm so that we can come out of this pandemic. But having a deployed a vaccine at that scale, 100,000 or even more than that people, without having a backed up data, I think that is certainly dangerous moving forward. First, because vaccines require rigorous testing, and that's one of the reasons that we took that long time to come up with a vaccine that we can all trust. So any vaccine that is not rigorously tested would certainly be concerning moving forward, because it's not just the Russia itself. That would be setting an example for other countries, which will enhance the vaccine hesitancy and would require more efforts to have a high coverage. Because for me, major concern is not just having the vaccine. Concern is that how quickly and how widely we can deploy it. Because until we don't immunize 75% of the people, the effect of the vaccine would be significantly low, which we don't really want to see.
That's Mohammed Munir from Lancaster University. Many, many thanks, Doctor.
Pleasure to be here.
Let's have a look now at some other developments in the coronavirus pandemic. The World Health Organization has warned that the vaccines on the horizon should not lead to complacency. It says the virus is still spreading fast, and masks and other measures will be needed for the foreseeable future. Portugal has extended its state of emergency by 2 weeks. Much of the country is currently under lockdown to curb the spread of the virus. And the U.S. Centers for Disease Control is for the first time recommending the universal use of face masks outside the home because viral transmission is now at such a high level in the country. Japan's Hayabusa 2 spacecraft has successfully released a capsule carrying rare asteroid dust and rocks. It's expected to land at a remote base in Australia in a matter of hours. Japanese space agency officials cheered as a capsule detached from the spacecraft and began its descent to Earth. It contains rock and soil fragments from the distant asteroid Ryugu. Scientists hope the material will provide clues about the origins of life. The capsule's round-trip journey has taken 6 years. Let's bring in Zulfikar Abani from DW Science Department for more on this. Zulfikar, the capsule is making its way back to Earth even as we speak. What more can you tell us about the samples it's carrying?
I got to say, first of all, what's amazing is it's hurtling towards Earth at about 30,000 kilometers per, you know, every 2 hours. This is an incredible feat. Wow. The thing about asteroids, Ryugu asteroids, you know, they live in the so-called asteroid belt, which is between Mars and Jupiter. So as soon as I say Mars, I think a lot of people start thinking about human space travel. Are we going to live on Mars and that sort of thing? So essentially what we're trying to do is find out what the rocks and other bodies, the planets around that area, the moons around that area, what they're made of. Asteroids are made of rocks and metals. So we think immediately of resources, which is very important. But also by investigating whether it's an asteroid in this sense or a comet, as it was with the European mission on Rosetta, is we are discovering about the origins of life. Because these are pristine bodies, you know, they're very untouched by any kinds of life, as in human life, that is. We hope to find other things like water and resources, particularly as we look forward towards human spaceflight. And it can tell us how we may progress, because it's one solar system and all these different bodies are at different progressions, different ports in their sort of cycles of life. And so we can learn about everything, basically, where we're going.
That's big. That's big stuff. The Hayabusa 2 mission was launched 6 years ago, as you know. What was the main goal of the mission and where does it go next?
Well, I think as with all these missions, it's international collaboration. You know, there's a German and French instrument on board, or was a mascot, you know, took pictures and that sort of thing. But really speaking, what this is about is proving that the space community can go to a comet, in this sense, an asteroid, a comet or a moon, and actually come back, pick something up and come back. Because, you know, the thing about space flight and human space flight, this hasn't been done since the 60s and 70s, you know, bringing stuff back. The thing that weirds us out about going to Mars is if you go there, you're never coming back. And, you know, that's the one thing that freaks people out. And so what we're trying to do here is prove that we can go there. So we've got an American, you know, we've got the Chinese actually on the moon doing the same thing with the so-called sample return mission right now, as we speak. The Americans and Europeans are trying to do that with Mars as well, to bring samples back from Mars in the next few years. The Japanese themselves, they're trying to go to Phobos, one of Mars's moons, to bring samples back. And of course, the Americans have also just sent a helicopter to Mars. So we're just trying to find out, how do you fly about these objects? And can you sort of like pick stuff up and come back to Earth? Because that's really what we want to do. And also we want to find out what's out there, the minerals. Can we build bases on the moon? Is there enough stuff out there for us to live and perhaps use in space, or bring back to Earth? So we're just trying to learn about all sorts of things and basically further life. I mean, that's really the big picture for me.
I get even more excited just listening you talk about it. D.W. Zulfikar Abani, thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Let's take a look now at some of the other stories making headlines around the world at this hour. EU chief negotiator Michel Barnier and his UK counterpart say they've been unable to reach agreement on several key issues after a week of intense talks on a post-Brexit trade deal. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson and European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen will discuss the state of play by phone later today. A U.S. federal judge has fully restored the Obama-era immigration program known as DACA. The program provides work permits to some young undocumented immigrants and shields them from deportation. It's the second time a U.S. court has overruled the Trump administration's moves to cancel the scheme. Peru's Congress has repealed a farming law that triggered days of roadblocks and other protests by striking workers. Demonstrators welcomed the vote and began lifting blockades that had disrupted traffic on the Pan-American Highway. Some 2,000 trucks and buses are affected. In sports news, football's world governing body FIFA has approved maternity leave for women players. FIFA made the announcement at a virtual news conference on Friday. Female players are entitled to 14 weeks of maternity leave. Upon their return, clubs are obliged to reintegrate the players and provide adequate medical support. FIFA hopes the changes will offer stability and help boost the women's game.
We have always to remember that the players are the protagonists of the game. They are the most important part of the game. We have to make sure that we set the stage for them to shine when it comes to female players. This means that we should bring also more stability to their careers.
In the German Bundesliga, Hertha Berlin took advantage, complete advantage, I should say, of Union Berlin, who saw their lead disappear due to a red card. Then Hertha's Krzysztof Piątek stole the show. Union Berlin opened the scoring in the first half, but a few minutes later, Union were left with only 10 men to defend. Robert Andrich was sent off for this high foot challenge. Hertha leveled the score after the break. And then Polish striker Krzysztof Piątek played the hero. The super sub scored two goals within minutes to lead Hertha Berlin to a 3-1 victory over their city rivals. Ooh, that hurts. That's it. You're up to date. More world news at the top of the hour. Up next, reporter examines the threat to Beirut's cultural heritage after this summer's devastating explosion. And more news coming up, as always, at the top of the hour. Michael Oku from me and the team here in Berlin.